Yes, I do.
Okay. Amazingly.
Amazingly. And are we in more questions?
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Decker.
I move Senate Bill 761 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Decker has moved Senate Bill 761 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I don't want to carry it.
Chair will carry. No, I guess Senator Roofstar is the sponsor and will carry. There's no discussion. Clerk, call a roll.
Senator Billy.
Aye.
Vice Chair Decker.
Aye.
Chair Starr.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 761 is moved forward to do-pass recommendations. Senator Bruce Starr will carry. I had a work session on Senate Bill 761. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 745. Senator Millis. Please. And we have a sign up.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Education Committee, Senate Bill 745 was a bill that I had drafted after I'd learned that the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission some time ago implemented a rule relevant to teachers having to obtain a master's degree in order to continue teaching in schools in the state of Oregon. And the issue that I'm trying to address isn't so much the fact that they want teachers to have a master's degree, but if one understands the various step increases in salary that exist within the various labor contracts for teachers within the state, the effect of that particular rule was to increase the roll-up costs for school districts throughout the state. So Senate Bill 745 is a bill that would require that the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission determine a fiscal impact for rules that have been implemented prior to October 1st of 2003, and up to a five-year period following the effective date of the amendment. The bottom line is that they would be required to determine whether or not the fiscal impact of one of their rules would cost the state or school districts throughout the state, all school districts, more than $250,000. If there is a cost more than $250,000 for any rule prior existing, they would be required under this bill to repeal that particular rule if the impact is more than $250,000. And then also, if they did a fiscal analysis for any particular rule that had a cost of $1, then that rule would not go into effect until the Legislative Assembly approved that particular rule. There's Section 3 of the bill deals with Teacher Standards and Practice Commission would require them to determine that each rule adopted or amended by the Commission after the effective date of this act that had a total fiscal impact on all school districts. The bottom line is they would have to come to the legislature and have that rule approved by the Legislative Assembly. So that's a very rudimentary overview of the bill. The bottom line for me is that I don't think that various commissions around the state should be implementing rules that have broad impacts fiscally on school districts or the state, and I believe that it's the purview of the Legislative Assembly to review the costs and the impacts of those rules on our state budget. That's it.
Yeah. Please.
Senator Minnis, have you had an opportunity to look at the pay scale adopted by the various districts around the state that determines the incremental increases of teachers?
I have not personally, no.
Because I think you would find that each school district decides how much, if any, a person will get as they move along. I think all of them probably have implemented some steps depending upon your degree. I'm sure of that, but they may vary. And I think that basically then is a local issue dealing with the pay for a master's degree or anything else. I mean, that's determined locally. And so to require that a person have a fifth year or a master's, I think, is more of an educational improvement in terms of the ability to teach in a classroom than it is, and the side effect might be the pay, but that is, I think, is determined by the local district. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morsett, I don't disagree with you on that point. What I do disagree with is that you have a commission who is not, they are not the legislature. They're not responsible for the accountability of the roll-up cost of the various rules that are being implemented, and that's the point I guess I'm trying to make. We have, 198 school districts around the state. Each of them have different collective bargaining agreements, and you may very well be correct that it may be a matter of collective bargaining as to whether someone with a master's degree receives a higher salary or not. My objection to the rule adopted by the Teacher Standards Practice Commission was the fact that it was done by a commission in the implementation of a rule that had a fairly large fiscal impact. And I think that those fiscal impacts, over $250,000 in particular, should be held in abeyance or suspended until the Legislative Assembly has a chance to review that, because they do have broad fiscal impacts for the state as a whole. Education funding is one of those areas that, as you well know, consumes a large percentage of the state's general fund. That's also the one area that we have the least amount of information about or control over how those monies are ultimately spent. So, sitting on the Legislative Council Committee, you know, you do from time to time see rules implemented by various agencies, and the Legislative Council Committee reviews those rules for its compliance with legislative intent. And I would think that this legislature and future legislatures would like to know whether or not additional rules adopted by agencies or commissions would have a fiscal impact that's really out of the purview of the Legislative Assembly. So that's really the point here.
Yes. Do you consider this an unfunded mandate?
An unfunded mandate?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I understand your question.
Well, I mean, if we pass this bill, are you do you think that comes under the category of unfunded mandate? Are we mandating school districts to pay?
No, Mr. Chairman, again, I think in response to your question, Senator, the school district and their collective bargaining agreements would govern. So, for me, it's the legislature's ability to take into account all of the fiscal impacts of rules or, as you know, legislation. We just finished with your committee, Mr. Chairman, in health policy, where if you have a bill that moves through this process and has an impact of over $50,000, it has to go to Ways and Means, and that's for a very specific reason, so we can get a handle on how much money is being appropriated through the various bills here. I'm really kind of extending that to the rules-making process, too, particularly as it applies to Teacher Standards and Practice Commission, focusing on this one particular issue where there's a correlation between salary and education level.
One more. Try it one more time. Slightly different, though. Do you, you do then assume that this will impact the state funding of school? I mean, it will impact the budget. Okay, part of the cost of education includes, of course, teacher salary. Then this rule, if implemented, would, by requiring a master's degree, would necessarily elevate individuals to a higher level, which in turn would end up costing the district more money, some of which would be local, some of which would be state funded. So there's got to be a state connection in this piece of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, I think there is. The idea of holding the rule in abeyance until the legislature approves the rule brings that discussion back into the purview of the Legislative Assembly, so that there then is a conscious decision by the legislature to approve the rule and also review the cost associated with the rule. So, I have no problem with the idea that teachers would have a master's degree or perhaps even that there's a related salary increase. My concern is that the Legislative Assembly, who's responsible for the bulk of funding for education, and play a conscious role in that decision-making process, particularly as it relates to fiscal issues. It seems to me that it's something we need to get a handle on, if possible.
One more quick question.
So,
So you see this kind of in the role of the state legislature acting in the role of kind of a super school board to make sure that...
Mr. Chairman, Senator, in response to that, I think that when we're spending more than $250,000 vicariously through the rules process, I think that we owe fiduciary responsibility to our constituent groups. I don't think that the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission shares that fiduciary responsibility or accountability because they're not elected members. When I have to go back to my constituent group and say that the TSBC approved a rule that cost you a ton of money, $250,000 to my constituents is a ton of money, and I think it was substantially more related to this particular issue, they react to that kind of thing.
So you would see this as more of an unintended consequence of their rule, then, because the rule itself, I take it to understand you support. You know, you don't have a problem with requiring the master's degree. It's the unintended consequence of the cost incurred that could be incurred by that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it would be as if you had an appointed board basically voting on a rule that has a fiscal impact that you and I, as members of the legislature, ultimately have to fund, and we have played literally no role in saying yay or nay to that rule. We also do the same or similar thing with the Criminal Justice Commission, where we have to approve the rules of the Criminal Justice Commission related to sentencing in order for those rules to become effective. And we've done that because it has a significant impact on the fiscal situation of the Department of Corrections.
Okay. Thank you,
Senator.
Thank you so much, yes. Senator Morissette. Thank you.
You've helped us. And Vicki Chamberlain. Please come up and explain how your rule came to be and why we need to protect that opportunity.
Senator Starr, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Vicki Chamberlain, the executive director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Committee. I think it's my first time in front of you this session. It's nice to be here. excuse me. The rule came about after the new licensure design occurred and was approved by the legislature in 1997. And in 1997, the language in that bill, which was part of the redesign to help implement educational reform and standards-based education, was to move teachers to a higher standard also. And inside the statute, which is now at 342.138, it says that the commission will be requiring advanced education as part of the new licensure requirements. The implications for that were that the commission then would require more education for elementary teachers, essentially, because secondary teachers have been required to have a master's or a fifth-year degree since 1965. Yeah. So, for example, for me to keep my license when I was teaching, I had to get my master's within 5 years or I lost my right to teach. And I did from 1980 to 1985, I did that. So it wasn't clear to me initially reading the bill where Senator Menes was going. So what I did is I physically analyzed every rule within his time frame. But actually that rule was enacted prior to 1999. So the impact on districts has yet to be determined because the licensure design hasn't been fully implemented. So I can tell you this, that 75% of Oregon graduates today graduate with a master's degree because the legislature mandated the redesign of our public university education programs in the late 80s. They said that all public universities in the state have to offer their education programs through a master's degree. The thinking was that I would get my bachelor's in math and I would have more content, and then I would go through my master's and get my pedagogy and my education classes. So that means that 25% of our Oregon graduates who did not graduate with a master's degree are coming from our private institutions. There's 12 of them that offer teacher education through a bachelor's degree. But to be fair, to give you the whole picture, 60% of the new people we license from out of state are from out of state and don't come from Oregon institutions each year. So... And I can't report to you today, but I could next session precisely how many of those have master's degrees, because we haven't necessarily had to collect that information until now. And now with No Child Left Behind, we have to report every teacher's degree to the public now and help school districts with that. So that'll be an interesting new requirement. The school report card says that 45% of Oregon teachers today already have master's degrees. and this is prior to the full implementation of the new licensure. That's as of, as though we hadn't implemented that bill. So I sensed a question.
Yes, I, a couple. You indicated that the degree program was established to provide a major content area with a bachelor's degree and methods and fulfillment of the master's degree.
In the public universities, yes.
In the public
universities, because that's really the where the legislature can reach.
Sure. Now, I had thought that one of our big problems in public education was the failure of our teachers to be trained in the content area. And if they're coming out with a content area in BS, then how does those two things get together?
Those two concepts?
Yeah, the fact that we are short of content area teachers in the classroom and we're getting the content with the BS degree.
I don't believe that that statistic or that information applies to Oregon. And I think the whole last part of the 80s in Oregon was devoted to changing our educational system. And looking down the line, part of Vera Katz's agenda was to improve teacher education by requiring this master's change even before she went to promote her Oregon Educational Act for the 21st Century in 1991. So, and it was all, frankly, out of the reports we had in the 80s and Nation at Risk and all of those that were undereducating. And we have, I would say, been on the cutting edge for education in Oregon for quite some time.
For the testimony?
Just depends on if you want it, I guess. I will tell you this. The master's degree cost to school districts has been a big concern across the legislature in both houses. And the commission last meeting passed a resolution, and here is the resolution they passed. By way of background, we have a bill over in the House to extend the timelines for implementation for this, which would postpone, actually, the implementation of the master's degree requirement if we're successful in getting it through both houses. But we've committed between now and the next session to determine the fiscal impact of the master's degree requirement on school districts and teachers, to determine the impact of the requirement on out-of-state teachers, so we would have to figure out how many of those folks would be needing to get a master's to meet the requirements, and in that same vein, determine if there's an equivalent. If somebody with 60 postgraduate hours, whether it relates to a master's or not, is sufficient. Examine the history and the role of the master's degree in the professional licensure of teachers, and compare the achievement of students in classrooms of teachers who hold a master's degree with the achievement of students in classrooms of teachers who do not, so that we could come back with some credible information on the issue. So, and I did make a phone call to the School Boards Association about the cost, and it's not an issue that they're worried about right now. It's not a big cost to the district. A teacher 10 years on a bachelor's degree could get the same amount of pay as a first-year teacher on a master's degree, and then after that, they're 3% increments generally moving up. So we would have to do a reliable study on what the true costs are of the requirement.
Well, I appreciate that. Any further questions?
Well, did you say that you have there is a House bill that would delay the implementation of the master's requirement?
Yes, Senator Starr and Senator Morissette. The original legislation said that under the new system, a teacher would get an initial license for 3 years. It's renewable once, which means that if they didn't have a master's degree, they would have 6 years to get their master's degree, complete all their requirements, and then they, because of the way the statute was designed, they lose their license. There isn't even any ability for the commission to make a rule to extend.
We passed that law?
Yeah, you did.
Why? That doesn't make sense.
Well, I guess I need to say for the record, I've only been here for 9 months. So, no. I asked. I was really curious. I think that some of the original drafters were motivated to compel people to complete their requirements, not even thinking about implications.
Ms. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
But Vicki, your example seemed like a good one to me. You're going along teaching, enjoying it, and now we've told you you have to go back and get your master's to continue, and the district's happy, the parents are happy, and we've told you you have to go and get your master's to continue on in the classroom.
Senator Starr and Senator Decker, just to be absolutely clear, the requirement is only for new licensees. So that people coming into the profession would know in advance it's a requirement. We wouldn't send the 25,000 or so teachers who are licensed under the old system back. That would be unreasonable. But I also think it's unreasonable to set absolute timelines because life happens to people. I mean, particularly women, they get married, they have children, or people have jobs and things. Or, I have to tell you, even the worst statistic for me is that we have about 7,500 people in the new licensure system, but only 2,600 of them have jobs right now because of the economy in the districts. Mm-hmm. And so they need their jobs in order to get to the next stage of licensure. So we have a problem, and I don't think the commission, when they proposed the statute in 97, was looking far down the road.
Follow-up question. We have these statutes. How does this line up with No Child Left Behind and teacher quality requirements of that new legislation?
To totally eliminate the master's degree would cause us some problems because for secondary and high school teachers, having a master's degree is one way to be highly qualified under No Child Left Behind. It wouldn't stop people. And as we talked about with school boards, as long as there's a salary schedule that gives you an incentive to get paid more, whether we require it or not, people work toward their master's degrees, which is an unknown factor we will never be able to anticipate. But since we do reward people for more education, it would be impossible to predict. I think it was the No Child Left Behind Act, we're in good shape with our new licensure system. It would not be fatal to our new licensure system if the master's degree were prohibited, but it would wreak havoc with our administrator programs. So that's, I think, my fairest assessment.
That helps me with clarification. Sir,
are we talking about prohibiting it? We're not talking about prohibiting anything here.
Excuse me, Senator Starr, Senator Morissette, no. However, I have grave concern over the fiscal impact of a dollar requirement in this bill. The legislature gave the commission the authority to enact rules, and it doesn't say impact on what, and it's difficult to say that any rule has no fiscal impact. Mm-hmm. Even though I will leave you the assessment of our rules on districts, the impact almost always, except for this one requirement, is nothing. It's almost all on the candidates. 95% of teachers pay their own licensure fees, you know, pay for their own education, a lot of folks, because tuition reimbursement is very finite from districts. So,
I guess let me ask that question again. Then you think that this bill would have an impact on the administrative program? Is that what you're saying?
This bill said we would have to repeal any rule that we discovered. I think the bill would have to be amended. It said the rule truthfully was enacted prior to January 1, 2001, and that's where Senator Menace asked us to reach back to. But let's assume that it was enacted as he intended. I think it would be very easy to determine in any measure that statewide there would be a $250,000 impact if you were going to go and try to evaluate where people might land on salary schedules on that rule, which would require under the bill that the rule be repealed. I guess I maybe was leaping ahead too far, but that's how I understood the bill as I read it.
Well, I appreciate very much the discussion, and I think that one of the larger intents of the bill is just to give the legislature proper opportunity to discuss, debate issues where costs are then shifted to state funding. And I don't know that we get there with this bill, but it is, I think, an important issue, and we're going to have to be aware of very much so in this mm-hmm. session of the legislature and for the next biennium. So I appreciate very much Senator Minnis bringing the bill. But Senator Minnis, you've got a rebuttal kind of a discussion here. Yes.
Shelley?
No,
stay right
there.
Nope.
I just want to get a point of clarification, because the documents that I have from the website from TSPC indicates that January 15th, 1999, and I got this after the bill was drafted, actually, requires the licensure for all K-12 educators to be changed, and it goes on to mm-hmm. say that it includes a master's degree. So I was a little concerned about the testimony before the committee was that if you were teaching and you didn't have a master's degree, that you wouldn't require them to go back and get a master's degree, but this seems to say something different, so I didn't know.
Senator Starr, Senator Minnis. The statute at the same time grandfathered in all previously licensed teachers, and one of the reasons we've seen little impact of the master's degree requirement is it began January 1, 1999. We're now in April of 1993, which means we're just a little bit over the first 3 years, and the full requirement wouldn't kick in under the rules for 2 years, which people will have 6 years to get their master's degree, and that's probably what I didn't say very well. But the statute said I held a standard license, a basic and standard license, and it grandfathered me in that I wouldn't have to meet the new requirements. Is that the question?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the testimony and the fact that you're having a hearing on this bill. I have really no vested interest in the success or failure of this. I do think that it's important, though, when you have a commission, and maybe the bill really should have been more broadly defined so that all rules implemented should have a fiscal impact. And maybe rather than singling out the Teacher Standards Practice Commission as a single agency, I think the legislature should take seriously rules implemented that do have a subsequent fiscal impact to the state, because that is a kind of subterranean area of law, of administrative law, that we ultimately end up paying for that may not have been anticipated as bills move through the legislature. But as it relates to teachers and licensure issues, where it also relates back to negotiated contracts, there is a fiscal impact that's much larger proportionally in our budget. So I'll submit my comments to the committee and leave it to your wisdom, and it has a nice relating clause if you want to use it for some other purpose. But
may I ask you,
I didn't see that.
Have you, Senator Minnis, are you aware of the OLCC rulemaking process and the fiscal impact that it has for the state both ways, coming and going? Huge.
Yeah.
And I think you raise an interesting point, because I'm sure that practically every administrative department makes decisions quite often that does have cost, and I think your idea is a good idea. What would be the cost of doing a study on the fiscal impact? So that's my question.
Well, that's an excellent question. I think that legislative fiscal probably should play a role to some degree in the interim, looking at these issues, because I think that's the difficulty that we have when we sit for 6 months in the legislative assembly. Everybody has a brainstorm and a good idea that moves through the process, and then several years later we find out that it really has a roll-up cost that's fairly large. So I think that the legislative fiscal office, whom I think should be staffed better with more people and, you know, adequate staff to do the work that needs to be done there, that we ought to play a larger role in making sure that the legislation that we passed and subsequently the rules that are adopted by the agencies, conforming to the rules but also minimizing the fiscal impact to the state overall, it ought to be connected together. I guess that's what I'm saying. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both. Appreciate it. It's been an interesting discussion. And we will see where we go from here. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 745 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 581, Senate Education in subcommittee fashion, right at the moment. And Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Chair Starr and members of the committee. For the record, I am Avelle Gordley, representing Senate District 23, which includes neighborhoods in northeast and southeast Portland. Let me say at the outset that Senator Jackie Winters had wanted to be a part of this presentation this afternoon, and I believe she's been called out of the building. You may hear from her at a later date. You have in front of you my formal written testimony and then also some documents from the Education Trust, which we're providing as background. You've just been handed a missing page, 11, so I would ask you to please insert that. This bill, and let me say also additionally, Mr. Chair, how grateful I am to Vicki Chamberlain, the new executive director at the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I can tell you from conversations I've had with Ms. Chamberlain that she is already providing a quality of leadership, aggressive leadership, at the commission that, in my view, has been long overdue, particularly when we look at what it is this state must do if we are, in fact, to truly ensure that every child receives a quality education, and when you look additionally at what are the opportunities under the No Child Left Behind federal legislation. With that said, I offer testimony this afternoon in support of Senate Bill 581. Senate Bill 581 directs the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to develop standards for determining teacher competency in teaching reading and also competency in teaching math as a requirement for certification to get a teaching license. These standards shall be developed in consultation with public and private schools of education within higher education institutions, the State Department of Education, and other professional educational organizations as determined by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The bill also directs the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to report the standards to the 73rd Legislative Assembly no later than February 1, 2005. The new standards would apply to persons issued an initial teaching license by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission on or after July 1, 2005. I have agreed, after conversation with Vicki Chamberlain, to delete lines 14 through 16 from the bill, which should have the effect, we believe, of eliminating a fiscal impact. The deletion removes the requirement that an applicant demonstrates competency in teaching math and reading during the process of obtaining an initial teaching license, but it does establish this competency as a target and leaves the specific standards to be determined by the TSPC and other groups. This approach allows the work to get underway. This increase in standards is needed because, despite some degree of progress, too many Oregon students and disproportionately low-income and minority students are being left behind. This is a reflection of a national trend and a crisis that requires action now. Math and reading skills are critical to student success, and it is only reasonable that teachers beginning a career in Oregon become competent in teaching those skills. It is far better for our students and for our state that these teachers become competent before being entrusted with the responsibility, and that is the result that Senate Bill 581 is designed to accomplish. A recent report by the Oregon Progress Board, November 2002, looked at the progress of Oregon's racial and ethnic populations in a number of benchmark categories, including education. According to Jeff Tryons, Executive Director of the Oregon Progress Board, African Americans, along with Hispanics and Native Americans, made significantly less progress over the past decade than did their white counterparts. Less than one-third of all African-American eighth graders in Oregon met the math standard last year. Yet nearly two-thirds of white non-Hispanic eighth graders met the same standard. By the 10th grade, only one African-American student in five meets the math standards. This is a crisis. Studies completed by the Education Trust, and again, you have information from the Education Trust attached. These studies demonstrate that the quality of the teacher makes the most significant difference in student outcomes. These studies also show that low-income and minority student populations are systematically taught by teachers with the least content knowledge, that the greater percentage of non-white students, the greater the percentage of lower-achieving teachers. There is a crisis in Oregon. This is why the President's No Child Left Behind initiatives have merit. Even without adequate funding, the No Child Left Behind initiatives inform us that there are policy changes that must be made if we are to equitably serve every Oregon child. If the average yearly improvement of the past 10 years continues in Oregon, it will be 22 years before African American students reach the math attainment levels achieved by white students last year. This is what the Progress Board information reveals, and this should be unacceptable to all of us, especially to this Education Policy Committee. Frankly, Mr. Chair, we need to spend more time as legislators than we have with the Progress Board, understanding the policy implications and findings in their research and report. I would ask the Chair to invite Mr. Tryons to share the Progress Board findings so that we can gain an even greater sense of urgency than currently exists in this building and in this state about this problem. We are fixated on funding education, and rightly so, but we should also be paying attention to how some current teaching standards contribute to the problem, and we should exploit every opportunity to close the achievement gap. Senate Bill 581 identifies the changes in certification standards that must be made if we are going to begin to impact this problem and reduce the number of children that are in fact being left behind in the critical areas of reading and math. The research is clear, and again I point to the Education Trust. Student performance is affected by the experience and training of the individual teacher in the classroom. The Education Trust has pointed out that if we only took the simple step of assuring that poor and minority children had highly qualified teachers, about half of the achievement gap would disappear. Some of you might recall that we had the Education Trust visit with us last session, and that the trust was created to promote high academic achievement for all students at all levels, kindergarten through college. The Education Trust focuses on institutions serving Latino, African American, Native American, and low-income students. They are the objective experts, and that is why we look to them for policy guidance. The Trust works alongside policymakers, parents, education professionals, and community and business leaders in districts across the country who are trying to transform their schools and colleges into institutions that genuinely serve all students. They have worked closely with the Education Crisis Team in Portland, the Portland Public Schools Foundation, the Portland School Board, and made a presentation to the City Club of Portland. I commend the organization and its work to this Education committee. And in the end, Mr. Chairman and committee members, what matters is that every child has highly qualified teachers, because well-qualified teachers can close the gap. The policy statement in Senate Bill 581 is focused on increasing the standards for teacher certification so that we are better positioned to guarantee that every child has a highly qualified teacher in reading and in math, leaving no child behind. I thank you, and again, I acknowledge the support and commitment from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to move this initiative forward. And I turn to my now partner, Vicki Chamberlain, for her assistance in making this presentation.
Question?
Yes.
Senator Marsette.
This is an interesting juxtaposition, I think, of the last bill that we've heard, that would move people up into the master's level. To what extent is this a local school board assignment problem? In other words, if there are certain schools that have a preponderance of minority students, I don't know how that translates into the teachers that are at that school, but I know that some school districts go out of their way to put some of the best teachers in the areas where they need to improve the performance of students. Now, I'm not sure what your experience has been in the Portland School District, but is this partly a district problem?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris said it is a related issue. Teacher assignments are a contract issue. And there are some barriers. I'm speaking now about the Portland Public Schools. There are some barriers, it can be argued, to getting the most effective teachers into the classrooms where they are most needed.
Yeah. Well,
Senator Marsette,
I guess I'm not aware that this is has become a contract issue. It certainly wasn't in the district that I taught in when I taught. But it is in Portland.
Okay.
So I didn't know that.
It is an issue, Mr. Chair. I think the word controversy can't be attached to the issue. But again, the approach here with Senate Bill 581 is to address the overarching policy issue, which is that we aspire that all teachers wishing to achieve certification would meet the highest possible standards. And we know that there is a direct correlation between the preparation of the teacher, particularly in reading and math, and the success of the child in the classroom. And that's the issue that we're trying to address here.
Thank you. I support that.
Further questions? I feel that I need to make a comment before I ask a question. I just so appreciate you bringing this issue forward, because, as you know, this is one that's near and dear to my heart. But yesterday I met with a private businessman in Progress who wants to meet with you and I. He's got a reading program where he can help the student for at least one quarter, perhaps one fifth, the cost of the public system to gain a year's knowledge in reading. And he wants to sell this program to public schools so that he can assist in remediation where it's needed the most. And I think it's something that we need to look at, not just for the really tough schools, but for some that maybe is just marginally tough, where we really need some reading improvement. And so it's an issue of having the right program with the properly trained instructors so that these children gain the knowledge and they're not left behind. starting with kindergarten class this fall, we should have every child ready for first grade next fall. And that's where I'd like to see us be. And I know we're not going to reach quite that far, but it's that's a part of No Child Left Behind, and that's why Reading First is being rolled out there. So I guess the question is to Vicki, can we do this? Is this bill, with the modification, the right thing to be doing?
Senator Starr, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Executive Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I think that the bill is, time has come, not just because of Oregon statistics, but because of No Child Left Behind. And I've been total immersion on high quality teacher lately, and the federal law says that districts cannot assign the reading problems and the low-income students to the least experienced teachers. It's specific in the federal language. The evidence has been so clear for so long, I think that the Congress finally took the bull by the horns. That said, what I asked Senator Gordley for was some time to look at the implications to the university programs and the programs we already have and some of the things we already have to do for not only for No Child Left Behind but for teacher preparation. So, for example, every elementary teacher in the state has to take a basic skills test and they have to take a multiple subjects test to demonstrate their content knowledge. Where Senator Gordley's bill is different is that we don't require teachers at any point to demonstrate their ability to teach reading or demonstrate their ability to teach math. I also wanted to assess what the effect would be for secondary teachers. For example, I mentioned to our physics teacher who may never teach reading, you know, to see what's reasonable. It also will be interesting to see what happens now that we're doing annual testing under No Child Left Behind and federal money is being focused on reading. We have federal grants that are, we're revising reading programs in the institutions. I'd like to look at that and see what the effects of that are. And so it would be quite a stretch. However, the fiscal impact, at least for looking at these issues and assessing them, can be a little bit absorbed because we have to look at our tests anyway in light of No Child Left Behind. Whether this bill were passed or not, we're going to be looking at these requirements for teachers. So while we're doing it, we should be looking at this issue, the cultural competency issue, which is also part of the whole equation of underrepresented students performing. So, but not having to have it ready to implement by 2005 takes a tremendous amount of financial and other pressure off of my office for 2 years. But I think it's reasonable for us to come back and tell you what we found.
Further questions?
Well, just one question. Do you think that the federal law prohibiting teachers to poor performing schools will have an impact on the Portland district's contractual agreement with the teachers? Does that supersede? That seems like it would.
My crystal ball is really cloudy, Senator Morris said on that issue. I think that that's going to be an interesting issue, how that evolves. I do know that regardless of Portland's contract, there are some elementary schools who have redesigned to have their most experienced teachers teaching their hardest to learn students, which means it's possible under any labor management model to do something within a contract. And some of the schools in Portland are demonstrating that. So I always hate to hide behind a contract as being a sole stopper, you know, to do something. It has to, because if now under No Child Left Behind, we have to say that our African-American students are performing up to the same level as everybody else, our Latino students and our Asian students and everybody else. And if they do not, then the school is designated as needing improvement. And if that happens for 2 years, then the program, like you mentioned, Senator Starr, becomes a viable supplemental service for the district to purchase to improve the learning gains. And all this has to be, as you know, published and released to the parents and the public for how we're performing. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of the old ways that we've done business continue to affect our schools.
We have no amendment available yet.
Mr. Chair, I would offer that Vicki Chamberlain and I will put our heads together and come up with language for that amendment. We did want to come forward today with the bill to let you know that we have reached an agreement informally.
Appreciate that very much. Anyone else want to testify on Senate Bill 581? If not, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 581 and we're adjourned. Well.